Okay, we're up to Ezra Perikhes Pasik Chav Dalit. Vo'avdila misori hakehanim shnei masar. Ezra, after they fasted, they're preparing to take their to travel. They're about to depart. He realizes that they have only a very small number of people, about 1,700 people, and he realizes it's a very dangerous trip, and they don't have enough security. So he declared a yom tzom, a fast day, a yom mispalel, and he gets the sense that Hashem has granted his request. They will have safe passage. Either he was a Navi, he had either a dream or a vision, or he had just a certain sense that Hashem had granted his request, and now they are about to depart. But he wants to give over all of the valuables, the kelim, and all of the various donations for the Beis HaMikdash. He wants to deposit it in the hands of very specific people. So from the 1,700 people, we have here Levim and Kohanim. We have primarily the Kohanim. We have both. We have Kohanim. We have only a small number of Levim. We learned we have about 50 Levim, whatever it was, 40 Levim. So he wants to give over a point. The Levim, they were the ones in the Midbar who actually carried the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. So he's reenacting. There's a lot of symbolism and reenactment that's taking place here as Ezra travels to Eretz Yisrael. It's like the Masos. Okay, so you have to read that in between the blinds. This reenactment of the 48 masos, which were done by Klal Yisrael as they left Mitzrayim to travel to Eretz Yisrael. Then it took 40 years. Now it's going to take 4 months. But there is some degree of reenacting what happened in the past. Who are the ones that carried the Mishkan, the Kalim of the Mishkan? It was the Levim. It was B'nai Merari, B'nai Kahas, the Levim. And the Kohanim, to a certain degree also, they carry the Aron, according to some opinions. So here he's doing the same exact thing. V'avdila misori ha-Kohanim. I separated from the leaders of the Kohanim. We don't know exactly who the Kohanim were, but we do know they were a collection of Kohanim which accompanied Ezra to Eretz Yisrael. Shneim Osar, 12. 12 Kohanim. Now here it says something which is subject to much discussion of how to read this pasuk, l'sheirevya and chashavya. To sheirevya and chashavya, these are two people that are mentioned above who were clearly Levim. V'imohem, and with them may achehem, from their brethren, asara, another 10. Pasuk is very vague. There are many interpretations. Let's take one at a time. First interpretation is that there were a total of 24 people that were assigned to guard and carry the kalim and the donations, the money that was collected for the Beis HaMikdash. 12, what?
Where does it say that there were 24?
Oh, I'm going to show you. 12 Kohanim and 12 Levim. Now, when it says Sheirevya and Chashavya, those must be Levim, because they were listed above. When Ezra was about to depart, he inspected the people and he discovered, you know what, we got a problem here, we have no Levim. We're in trouble, there are no Levim here. So you go to Pasuk Yud Ches is where, after he sent, we mentioned there were 11 people that were sent to the city called Kosifya to speak to the person Edo, and to persuade Edo that he should persuade the people living in the city to hand over, to convince Levim to accompany Ezra to Eretz Yisrael. And Edo listened, and Edo convinced, Pasuk Yud Ches, go back above, Vayoviu elonu kiyad elokeinu hatoiv oleinu ish sechel libnei machli uven levi uven Yisrael v'sheirevya uvonav v'echav shmoin asr, 18 people from the family of Sheirevya. These are Levim. And Pasuk Yud Ches V'yes Chashavya V'ito Yishai B'bnei Merari Echav Remeshim. So there's no doubt, there's no question that these two people, Sheirevya and Chashavya, are Levim. And that is correct. So we have a big problem here in this Pasuk, because Pasuk of Dal begins V'avdila Misorei HaKoyhanim. How could it be that in the same Pasuk we have Koyhanim and we have also Sheirevya and Chashavya? So what's going on? Something doesn't make any sense. So are they Kohanim or the Levim? Sheirevya and Chashavya Levim. Yet it says he's separate from the Sorei HaKohanim. So one answer given is one approach. We'll see Rashi and the Mitzvah in a moment. But let's just discuss the general approach to the pasuk. Is that there were a total of 24, You have to break the pasuk into two parts. First, I separated Misorei HaKoyhanim Shneim Osar, period. I separated 12 members from the family of the Kohanim. And they were going to be in charge. They're going to carry the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash to Yerushalayim. Period. In addition, you have to add this in between the lines. In addition, I also separated 12 Levim. Who were the 12 Levim? We don't know. We only know two of them. They were Lishayravia and Chashavia. Those were the two most distinguished Levim that had accompanied the Jews to Eretz Yisrael. And plus, V'imohem Me'achayhem, and with them, from their brethren, other Levim, Asarah, another 10, for a grand total of 12. So it's 12 Levim, 12 Kohanim, a grand total of 24 people. They're going to be appointed to carry and to guard the donations and the kelim that are going to be brought to Eretz Yisrael. That's one approach. No, exactly. That was the whole story. And Pasuk Tesvav, exactly, that's the whole narrative. Pasuk Tesvav, I gathered them. And they would know, V'na'avavina v'om v'akoyinim v'mnei levi loy motzot yisham. So what did I do? Pasuk Tezayin. I was desperate. So I sent 11 people to Edo. V'eshlecha, I sent. Who did I send? Le'eliezer. Now that means, the Lamadir does not mean two, means I sent Eliezer and Ariel and Shemaya. I sent a whole list of 11 people. To whom did I send? Pasuk Yitzayin. I sent them to Edoi Horosh in the city called Sifia. That was the city of Levim. And I asked them, I put the words in their mouths to convince them, persuade them to give us some Levim. And they were successful. Not only were they successful in extracting Levim, they also got Nesinim. Nesinim. And now they're accompanying Ezra. Among those, what was it, 40, 48? Of those 48 Levim, I took 12 of them and I assigned them the task. You are in charge of the donations and the kelim, together with another 12 Kohanim, for a grand total of 24. That is one approach. Another approach is, there were only 12. Pasuk of Dal Vavdil Misorei HaKohanim Shnei Masar. I separated from the Sorei HaKohanim 12. L'sheirevya chashavya v'imohem me'achem asara. It's interpreted to mean that there were only 12 Levim who were under the authority of the Sorei Kohanim. So when it says Misorei HaKohanim, it does not mean literally that I separated 12 Kohanim. I separated 12 people who were under the authority of the Kohanim. Who are in charge of the Levim? Go to the Beis HaMikdash. Who's in charge? There are Kohanim and there are Levim. The Kohanim do the Avodah, and the Levim are the gatekeepers. They do Shira. They're in charge of maintenance. But who is in charge? On the hierarchy of the authority of the Mikdash, the Kohanim are in charge. A Levi always reports to his superior. Who's the superior? The Kohen. So here when it says Vavdila separated Misorei HaKohanim, it means it separated from the people who were under the authority of the Kohanim, 12 Levim. Who are the 12 Levim? Lishayravia and Chashavia, plus another 10 for a grand total of 12 under the authority of the Kohanim, but a grand total we have only 12, not 24. So these are the two general approaches to understand this very difficult passage. Let's see Rashi and Mitzudas. Yes, Kohanim are called Levim.
Do we have a remote on that?
Oh, so you want to say that? That's a very good idea. Okay, I like what you're saying. I didn't see it here in writing in front of the Mefarshim. I don't know if it looks that much, but you want to say is that the terms are used loosely. So when it says here Kohanim, it means really Levim, because HaKohanim HaLevim, their terms are interchanged. Sometimes Kohanim are called Levim, sometimes Levim are also called Kohanim. Because Kohanim, the whole Klal Yisrael are called Kohanim. Ya'atem tihiyuli mamleches Kohanim. The whole Klal Yisrael, we're called relative to the nations of the world, we are all Kohanim. Kohanim means a teacher. It really means a teacher. So that instructs. So you're right. Okay, you're saying a good point that maybe here we have a third interpretation. It means I separated 12 Levim, because we again these two people there, they are Levim. There's no room for doubt. Sheravia and Chashavia are clearly Levim, as been defined above in the pasuk. It's too much of a coincidence to say that there were another Kohanim that had the same exact name. When two Pesukim above, we have exactly the same thing listed. But we can call them loosely Levim, a Kohanim, because relative to Klal Yisrael, they were an established state of God, they were guarding us. Okay, it's an idea. It's definitely an idea. Let's see the Rashi and the Mitzvah. This pasuk Chav Dal in Rashi, Vavdila v'chasher ha'yisi sham al nahar ahava. While I was stationed on Nahar Ahava, a lot of things going on there. A lot of things happened on this river. That's where they. That was the staging point to make their departure, like the airport. And there he was discovered there were no levim. And there they had a fast. They had a fast. And there he made an inspection. There were no levim. And he sent representatives to the city of Kosifia to find levim. And there he was goyzer tzoyim, a fast day, tefillah saderech. A lot of things happen here. Now as we're about to depart, I along this river, hivdalti misari hakohanim, among the leaders of the kohanim. Okay, all different interpretations. Vishakalti lohem akesef. The Rashi is really ready jumping into the next psukim. I weighed. Okay, we're going to see a very detailed accounting of exactly what he handed over to these either 24 individuals or 12 individuals. I weighed out to them the silver and the gold, litain ba'otzra space Hashem, which would be deposited in the Beis Hamikdash when we would arrive in Eretz Yisrael. Let's see the Mitzvah pasuk Chav Zitzchav Dalid Lishereivya. So Mitzuda says these are clearly from Bnei Levi, not to make any mistake, as we learned above in the Pesukim above, that these two people in Pasuk Yudches, Pasuk Yudches and Yutes are Bnei Levi. Okay, Pasuk Chavav. Now, Pasuk Chav Hei. I'm sorry, we are up to Pasuk Chav Hei. Vo'esh I weighed Elohim. Now, it doesn't say that I counted. It's interesting that you would think that since we're dealing with Kalim, dealing with, you know, today you would count. How many containers? I'm giving you a case of glasses. There's 24, 48. It doesn't say that. I'm giving you a case of wine. You have 12 bottles. It doesn't say that. It says that it was done with weight. It appears that the weight was more precise than counting the actual utensils. Maybe in those days you would chip off some gold and silver. Gold is very real gold is very you can probably peel it away a little bit. So I guess soft. You can so that you have to make sure that not only did they count the utensils, they actually weighed the utensils. So there should be no chshat. No one should be suspect that they stole anything from the donations. Again, this parallels what happened in the time of the Mishkan. There's a lot of symbolism happening. Moshe Rabbeinu, he counted, he collected machsa shekel, and Moshe Rabbeinu over and over he made an accounting. I've collected from the entire Klal Yisrael machsa shekel. There were three different. There were this week's parasha shkolim. This is I collected from Klal Yisrael machsa shekel three times for different purposes, and Moshe Rabbeinu different points in the Torah made an accounting. And then we have yes, at one point in time Moshe Rabbeinu was short. There was money that was missing. Chazal tell us they almost suspected Moshe. They took some of the money for himself until he remembered. V'yaso elef u'shva me'os v'chamishim. It was 1,775, which is interesting. That's almost the number over here. The 1,775 shkolim, which Moshe Rabbeinu forgot. What happened? Where they went? He collected from Klal Yisrael machsa shekel for 600,000 people, 300,000 shkolim. And from the 300,000 shkolim, he was short. He could not figure out where 1,775 of those shkolim went until he remembered they were used for the amudim, the vavei who amudim, the hooks on the pillars which were used to connect the curtains on the Mishkan. So it's interesting, the number over here is approximately 1,775, a little bit less, are people who actually went. Ezra is very careful here to make an exact accounting of all of the donations. No one should be suspect, not him and not his associates, that the money was stolen. We all unfortunately know all too good and well there are so many scandals today in all the best of places where money is just missing. Where did the money go? Even with all the technology and electronic recording, somehow things just disappear. That's not going to happen here. He is extremely meticulous to make sure there's an exact accounting before they begin. Lo eshkola, I weighed lohem esakesef, the silvia, sazovia, sakelim, three things, kesef, zav, and kelim. Then it says through a very important word which Chazal spent much time focusing on, trumas beis elokein, the gift. The gift that was given to base, look into the Beis HaMikdash. The word truma normally means produce. Produce given from the Yisraelim to the Kohanim. Grain, the Shivas Haminim, which the Yisrael separates. 1/50th min HaTorah, there's no shear to truma, but midrabanan, we give at least 1/50th. 1/50th of the produce is given to the Kohanim. It's produce. Here the word truma is used as uplifted, which means donations. It's not being used in reference to produce. It's used to be clearly kesef, zahav, and kalim. It's not the usual word for truma. In the Torah, you have truma also, but there you could always... You can always finesse that it refers also to produce. Most of the times it appears in the Torah. Here, it's clearly not referring to a product of the earth. It's referring to cash. And yet, we're using the word truma. So this Chazal learned the word truma means anything that's set aside. It's a word, it's fair game to use this word in reference to anything that's set aside as a donation to the Beis HaMikdash. Does not only mean things that set aside produce that's given to Kohanim. Truma. Right, Parashas Truma, Zos HaTruma. So there, Zav Kesen Chodesh, you're right, it's a good point, you're right. So therefore, that's even a better example. That's Mamash explicit in the name of the Parashah. You can't get better than that. You can't get better than that. So, okay, I hear what you're saying, but I must have been missing the point. When I prepared this, I saw a whole drasha on this. I'm missing something. There's something more. Maybe we'll come across as we go further in Rashi and Sudos and other Mepharshim, but let's put it aside for now. But the Truma space, Elekenu, Ha-He-Rimu HaMelech, the Yo'atza Viserav, which was lifted up by the king. We know that the Yavesh gave a donation, either from the treasury of the king or his private. It's not really clear to what degree, like in the United States of America, we all understand that the president has his own bank account. His personal bank account is not the government. He doesn't take money, he has a salary, he has a private bank account, and then there is the money of the country. So a king in ancient times, it was, I don't know, how does it work with Queen Elizabeth? Is her account... Does she have her own personal money, or she owns? I don't know how it works. In ancient times, what?
Lands, states.
She has private, assets. Completely private assets, nothing to do with the state. Now, in ancient times, it's not clear. I'm sure there were different types of governments, different types of kings. The deal with a king. Is it shaykh by a king to have private assets in addition to the assets of the state? But the king is the state. He is the state. So here...
The thing is by Hasidic Rebbe. No, I'm serious. They have their own private assets, and then they have...
I would imagine today it would be very unwise not to have your own private assets. There's no such thing today as authority in any...
Satmar Rebbe, I knew his private account.
Yeah.
He had private assets.
Right.
From that private assets, he used to give out stuck, and every penny was accounted for.
Okay. But in ancient times, when you deal with a king, so is the king, does he have private assets, or is he the malchus, he is the government. There's no such differentiation between private and public. So the point I want to make is the king gave a donation. And we learned in the past that the Shivas Roye Pnei HaMelech, the seven advisors, also gave donations. So the question is, when they gave the Shivas Roye Pnei HaMelech L'chor, they're not one and the same of the state. They don't have a share in the... It's not a corporation where they own stock in the government. They gave private donations. And it's all grouped together. The king gave a donation. I always wondered about this. The king gave a donation, and it's Yo'atzav V'Sarav, and V'Chol Yisrael, Hanim Tzoyim. We have over here all different types of donations. The donations given by the king, was that a private donation? Or was that, I'm giving you from the royal treasury? Or maybe both. Maybe there were both types of donations, but here we have all the different collections of Truma, Space Elokeinu, Ha'irimu, Hamelech, Liyayatzav, this Sarav, two different categories. I think it means for the reverse of the Shivas Roye Pinei HaMelech that we learned in the previous Parakim, and his Sarav, I guess the underlings, people that were on a low level, the Chol Yisrael HaNeim Tzim, which were found in the Bavel, Rashi's in Bavel, they gave money, and now we're about to make it a very careful accounting. Let's read one more Pasik, V'eshkola Al Yadam. Ezra repeats himself. I weighed out al yodam through them. And we'll see this thing with why it's repeated twice. So here we have three different types of things. Kesef, kikorim, sheish, meos, vachamishim. Silver. How much silver? 650 talents of silver. A kikor is a talent. A 650. Of I guess bars of silver. We're not dealing over here with kalim yet, just actual silver. And then uchlei chesef mea lichi karim, 100 utensils of silver. Now it says to lichi karim simply means there are different interpretations, but right now we'll settle. It means each one was worth one kikar. Lichi karim is plural. And when you combine the word liki kodem with the word uchlei chesef mea, each one of the silver utensils was equal weight, exactly, was comprised of exactly one talent of silver. And then it says zahav, gold, mea kikar. There are two interpretations as to what this means. Either it means that each, there were 100 gold utensils, and each gold utensil was one kikar. Weight equivalent of a talent of gold, or what it means is that all of the gold utensils together only equaled one kikar. Very big difference. A difference of 100 times. So either it means there were 100 kalim of gold and together weighed a kikar, or it means there were 100 kalim. Each one is, now the difficulty is, if it really means each one was worth a kikar, then there is an inconsistency. Because when it says, uchlei chesef mea lichi karim, there it is plural. And then when it comes to the gold, zahav, mea kikar, there should be, it should be consistent. It should say also lichi karim. The fact that we have this inconsistency would seem to indicate that all of the gold utensils together all equaled one single kikar. So in this pasuk, before we get to the next plug, we have basically three items so far. We have silver, and we have gold. We have silver utensils and gold utensils. Now, why here is the word v'eshkala repeated? It says first the pasuk chafev v'eshkala, and the pasuk chafev again. It's repeated. I was weighed to teach us the proper technique in giving something over to a custodian. Many times you go and you pay someone, you buy something, or you owe someone money. So what's the minug? You give someone $500. So you count out 5 20s. You give it to the person to help count it. Count it yourself. Don't trust me. Count it. That's proper. You learn that from this pasuk. When you give someone something, you should first count it in front of them. 20, 40, 60, 80, 100. When you give it to them, you count it. And they should then count it in front of you. That is the proper way. We learn from here the proper way to give over something to another person. There should be full accounting by you and by the person. Each one should see what the other one is doing. A very important halacha you learn over here from a very simple diak in the pasuk. Let's see the Rashi in these two pasuk chafin chavav, two short Rashis. Ha-hairimu, asher-hairimu, ha-nim tzurim b'bavel. Those people, the donations, there were many Jews, as we learned, at least, so you mentioned the number, 800,000 Jews that remained in Bavel, at least, if not maybe many, many millions. They gave nice donations. You can imagine being very generous. Jews have always been generous. We have a tradition. And certainly they gave very significant donations for the Beis HaMikdash. Next, Chavav, Uchlei Chesed Mea, L'Kikirem, Kikar, L'Chol Kli. L'Kikarim is Plosh Rabim. Each utensil was the value, the weight of one talent of silver. I'm not too good with these modern equivalents and times. You have to go look in the article indexes in the back and the appendixes, they have all these various calculations of what it equals in modern terms, but it was a lot of money.
Not too talented.
Talented, a good pun. Talented. Okay, talented.
We said that they didn't, a lot of Yidden didn't go up to
yes.
the thing because they thought it was, should be come down from Shemayim or whatever. So they didn't really hold of it so much at that time, and yet it's
they give you donations. it's easy to give. They were hedging. Maybe yeah, maybe not. So we'll give a donation. It's very common today. Do you believe in a cause? Many times people, they come, they collect, right? They collect for different causes. I don't really believe in this cause. I don't want to insult you. So I'll give you $50, I'll give you $36, I'll give you $100, I'll give you $1,000. Do I really believe in this cause? No. I just, look, there are a lot of very wealthy people, very wealthy people in the business world. They give $1 million donations to museums. Museums, and this is, I know of a person, I don't rub shoulders with these type of people, but I know someone, and I through some hole, he gave if not even $1 million donation to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And like I said to someone, what? This guy, first of all, he's rochok mizrach nimar from appreciating art. Let's talk about the secular world. I'm not talking about, you know, kollel. I'm talking about, let's say, put aside religion. He's into art. He couldn't care less about art. And certainly, he comes from a very choshev mishpacha. He comes from a family where all of his siblings and nephews and grandchildren are in kollel, and he's giving $1 million. So he explained to me. Says to me, "You have to understand, that's all part of the business. This is his business. This is what he does."
No.
Right, this is necessary for him to make. This is part of the deal.
Keeps his reputation going.
Exactly. He's not going to do this. He's not going to be able to associate with his partners and be successful. So it's not a kasha. They give money. Pressure, public pressure, peer pressure.
Or it was a way for leaving the wrong conscience.
Right. They're not going to Echanami. Okay, let's go further. So now we have to see the... Let's see Rashi, Pasuchavav. $1 million is a pretty big tax write off.
Of course.
Chavav, Al Yadam, Limsar, Mitsudos, Pasuchavhei. Okay, Pasuchav Eshla, Mosatil Hem Mishkol. I gave out him my weight. Haherimu, Asheherimu, which they lifted up. Hefrishu Hamelech, which the king has lifted up and separated. Hanim Tsuim, Bimalchus Bavel. We always refer to Bavel. It's just very interesting how much we always come back to Bavel. This is Poras, Persia. It's not Bavel anymore. And yet, we're still holding on to Bavel because it's only been 70 years. It's only been less 25 years since Bavel came to an end. So the Malchus of Paras was considered to be an extension of the Malchus of Bavel. Al Yadam in Pasuk V'Chavav in the Mitzudos. Al Yadam Limsa B'Yadam L'Kikorim Kol Kli Hayash Mishkol L'Kirecha. Okay, very looks like Rashi. Now Pasuk, back to the text. Pasuk Chav Zayin. Now there are more things. More things we are being moved over to the Levim. V'Uchiv Foyrez of bowls, a bowl, a bowl. The word koifer. We had this a few times. A lot of kapara, of kiper. What does it mean kapara? When we ask for atonement. Atonement is to cover our sins. It's not necessarily the best term for atonement, because of atonement you want to purge. What?
On the Aron Kodesh, you have the Kaporis.
The Kaporis, right, excellent, perfect. On the mark, a cover. What is the Kaporis? It is a cover for the Aron. The Aron is exposed. In the Aron are the Luchos. You can't leave it open, exposed. So you have to cover it, you have the Kaporis. Kapora, when we ask Hashem to forgive us, what are we asking? We're asking Hashem to cover our sins. There's a sin, cover it, don't look at it. It's not the ideal. The ideal is to eradicate the sin. The sin shouldn't exist. In a daim, if there's no sin, to where the sin is there and the sin is covered. What's the danger? Because if you take away the covering, the sin is exposed once again. It's very hard. A person does a sin in order to reach a level where it's not, where the sin doesn't exist anymore. That's not so simple. It's a hard avodah. So the best when we attempt to seek forgiveness, the simplest step, it's a long process, but the first step in the process is at least the sin should be covered. So a bowl a bowl is called a uchivore zahav. Now, a bowl also means to wipe. Now, that's what it means to come. But a bowl also means when the kohanim would do zuika, they would dip their finger into the bowl of blood. They would collect some blood on their finger and they would sprinkle it on the mizbeach. And then what would they do? That you don't put your finger back into the bowl for the next zuika because you have residual blood on your finger. They wipe it. They wipe their finger on the back of the bowl. And then their finger is clean. Then they re-immerse it in the bowl to collect new blood. You don't want to repeat the same blood. If you don't want to put the old blood that's still left on your finger back into the bowl. So you wipe. So the word kapores, kofer, chof peresh, the shosh of this word, also in addition to mean cover, means to wipe. Has the same idea. When you wipe something, you are covering the blood covering the object that you don't want to see. You're removing it to a certain extent. You're removing it from you. It's not exactly the same word, the same translation, but in concept there is a relationship. It means to wipe. Wipers. The bowls were called wipers because Kohanim, when they finished doing Zrika, would wipe their finger on the back of the bowl. And that's why we call a basin, a mizrak, a bowl that was used to collect blood, we call it uchifore zahav, bowls of gold, esrim 20. Then it says here this unusual word, la'adar chonim olef. Adar chonim is a coin. I think it's a Greek coin, right? Is that correct? What? A drachma? Right, drachma, but it's no longer in use today because of the euro. Right, the euro, all the European countries, they all merged, most of them, many of them, and they gave up their local currency, and one, this used to be a local currency in Greece, if I'm not mistaken, called the, what's it called, how you pronounce it?
Drachma.
But today it's no longer used anymore because it's been replaced by the euro. Unless they'll break. My father was an economist. My father's Chol Levracha, and he always told me he was very against the euro. He was very from the very beginning. He said to me, I remember having this long discussion with him Friday night. He was into this. He says it's a big mistake. He felt that it'll never survive. There's no way you can bring together all of these nations with one common currency. Exactly. Says they have their own, each country has their own economy and their own system, and you merge them all together, it'll be a chorban. And to a certain degree, my father's been proven correct that there are a lot of problems. Who knows if it would have been better? A lot of the economy in Europe would have been more stable had everyone preserved their own local currency, even though it's a tremendous tircha. Today, you know, you go on the train, 5 minutes, you're in another country, and then you have to have a whole different collection of bills. It's very, very inconvenient, but it's a very complicated.
Dollars
they'll take, but they don't give you the full value for the dollar. They rip you off on the dollar.
When the euro was stronger, but 4 years ago, when it was in Europe, they didn't want to accept dollars in.
Because it was very weak.
They wanted euro. They didn't want.
Yeah, because that was very weak.
But they accepted it at the end.
What about Scotland?
Scotland only wants Scottish money.
Scotland.
Yeah.
Scotland is, they don't have
their own
money, they have English.
And what about the shekel? The shekel was doing good for a while.
Yes, but it still is.
So, Israel didn't join in the euro. They were never invited to join in the euro. They were never. There's a fascinating website. They have all the different, just the way they do it. It's customized for each country. There's the euro for the whole region, but each country has their own. Their own local version of the euro. It's very, very interesting. But the point over here is we have this thing called the Adar Chonim, which has survived until modern history, until the end of the 20th century, this coin. And now it's the name of a coin. And here the Pasuk is telling us that the bowls of silver, Esrim La Adar Chonim Olaf, which means there are two different interpretations. Either it means that each bowl, each one of these 20 bowls, there are 20 bowls, each one equaled 1,000 dar konim. Or it means together, all 20 bolts together equaled 1,000 dar konim, period. Okay, different types of coins. Fine. Uchle nechoshes. Then we have copper. Copper was a very expensive type of metal in ancient times. Mutzhav tova. it was colored like gold. Mutzav is Zavit Sadi, and the Zion can be interchanged. Okay, that's a very common thing in Hebrew and Aramaic. So when it says Tzahav, it's like Zahav, gold. So it means the color, the copper, it looked, had the same color as gold. Shnaim, you can see this in different museums. I told you about the mirrors, the bronze, the copper mirrors that were used for the Kiar. It was used for the Kiar. It had a look of gold, a yellowish color. Shnaim, how many of them? Two of them. The word Shnaim is really stuck here in the middle. According to the Ta'anim, Shnaim is connected to the word Mutzav Tova Shnaim. It's connected to the word Tova. Two of them, two clay nechoshes, utensils of copper, had the color of fine gold. Two, Chamudos Kazov, in addition to the color of gold, they were valuable and they were precious. They were treasured like gold. It's very interesting that in one pasuk you have the same word, Zohav, twice. Once it's spelled with a Tzadi and once it's spelled with a Zayin. When we talk about value and Chamudos, then we refer to the Zayin. We tell the color, different connotation, we use the Tzadi. So we have over here two more types of utensils. We have the mizrakos to collect the blood, called the kefire, the wipers, and we have the klei nechoshes, two of them which were precious like gold. Let's see, there's a lot going on here in this pasuk, a lot of interesting things. Let's see Rashi one thing at a time. Pasuk of Zayin Rashi. The kefire, u'kefire, mizrakim. Mizrakim is a term which means to collect blood. It's very interesting that Achashverosh and the Baal Shetzar, they took out the kale of the Beis HaMikdash. What did they take out? They took out the Mizrakos. And what did they do with them? They drank wine. Doesn't make sense. It's a disgusting thing. Who would take a utensil and you go to the doctor, and the doctor has a pan that's used to collect blood from a patient, like a bloodletter. Think about ancient times. Would you go and take that pan that's used by a bloodletter to collect blood and take a drink? And take a drink of wine? I could go to an oil change for your car, right? So they collect the oil. Right? They collect the oil from the car, clean it out, wash it out, and now we'll put in some wine and make a l'chaim. Right? That's exactly what's going on. It's even worse. You would more likely take a drink of oil that's perhaps a more natural product than you would take blood. But that's what Achashverosh did. And that's what Baal Shetzar did. He took out the mizrakos, the basins that were used to collect blood for the korbanos. They cleaned it up and they used it to drink mishtei yayin, to drink wine. Okay, but that we have to know that the word mizrakim is a reserved term in Chazal to refer to a basin that's used to collect blood. Next, le'ador chanim, 1,000 coins, 1,000. Min matbea. It's a certain type of ancient coin. It's not so ancient, we have it today. 1,000, darkonim, hoyu. The Beis Kufri Zav Halalu were, the darkonim were used for both of these type of basins of gold. The Kufri Zav, I don't know what is a Beis. Hoyu be, what do you have? Yeah, your text, you have Beis? Two Beises?
No, Be'esrim.
Yeah, Be'esrim?
Then it's a
cough. Okay, I have a mistake in mine. This print, there are a lot of mistakes in this print. I have here, so it's Bechof. Bechof, that's why I figured it's Bechof, Koyfrey, Zav Halalu. So Rashi learns. Yes, I know, but in my print, I have over here a Chof. Bechof, the base. Okay, it's a mistake. Mine is a mistake. Fine. So I don't have a Chof. I have the base. Oh, I have here the base. That's why I don't understand what it means. My text says, Darkonim hayu bebeis kifarei zav halalu. Doesn't make sense. It must be b'chof. B'chof kifarei zav halalu. The 20 is a misprint. So we have over here. That's the question. There are two different. So look at Rashi carefully. Rashi says that is a matbea, 1,000 hayu for the 20 kofres of halal, which Rashi seems to say that together. There are two different interpretations. You have to look at the Rav Ral Bag. I remember seeing somewhere the two different interpretations. We'll see in a moment.
Interpretation. A lot of it means per.
Each one. Yeah. Per each one. In the Chananya. It could be used both ways. For each one or together. Rashi seems to be saying that together all 20 utensils equaled 1,000 darkonim. Okay. Min mutzav Rashi mutzav. Mishel nechoshes mutzav. Min mateya shel nechoshes. So Rashi says something very different. Now also I have here my text O. I have over here in parentheses. Also? Okay, so Yahweh or Mutzav. Mutzav simply means Mishon Choshes Mutzav, period. Okay, simply that means it was colored. Mutzav means gold. It's a term which we find other places in Tanakh. It means colored like gold, very expensive copper. There are different types of copper. There are copper that is not like gold, there's copper that is colored like gold. So this, all in this interpretation, min matdeh shel nechoshes, which would then mean that it was a certain type of coin. So then when it says klei nechoshes, mutzav tovos, I don't know what it means then, utensils of copper, mutzav tova, I don't really know then how he interprets it to mean a certain type of coin. The klei nechoshes resembled a certain type of copper coin. Maybe that's what it means. There were copper coins made from certain types of material, and that's what the klei nechoshes were made from this type of coin called the mutzav. Tova lashon nekeva karu nechoshes. So here Rashi is focusing on some tiktok. Tova is obviously lashon nekeva with a hair at the end, what then is it referring to? So it's referring to the nechoshes. Clay, there's a very big difficulty here in this pasuk, because clay is lashon zohar. Okay, clay is lashon zohar. So we have here a contradiction. Clay, nechoshes, zohar and nekeva. Then we have mutzav tova. Mutzav is zohar, and tova is nekeva. So there's a mixing of the genders. So what's the significance of doing of that? So some say that's fine, that's typical, that's what's done, and here in fact it works because clay nechoshes is nekeva, and clay is zohar. So to parallel the nekeva and the zohar, so we have over here tova goes on nechoshes, and mutzav goes on the clay. It's a certain style of writing. However, Rashi seems to be saying it's more than just a style of writing. The word tova refers to a certain type of nechosh, because you could be misled to believe that mutzav tova go together. That what type of gold color? It was a good type of gold color. You go to the coppersmith and you want a certain copper, so he'll show you different qualities of copper. This is a better quality and this is a lesser quality. So you could be misled to say that mutzav tova means it was the highest quality of mutzav. Mutzav is a certain type of copper that looks like gold. It was of the best quality. So along comes the Rashi, no, that's not the pshat. The word tova is now referring to mutzav because it wouldn't make sense. It would say mutzav tov, not tova. So the word tova is not going back on mutzav, but it's going back on the nechoshes. The nechoshes was of the highest quality, and it happened to have the color of gold. Not that it was a copper, which had a very good color of gold. Okay, so that's how Rashi wants to learn shat in the pasuk. Nechoshes goes back on, tova goes back on nechoshes. Claim.
Sefer HaTorah Hazeh.
Zos, yeah, both.
And Rashi says...
Sometimes Sefer can be used Zosh and Zosh in the cave. There are certain words which can be used both ways. That's correct.
But also Shabbos, Lekadsho.
Lekadsho can be used both ways. There are many words. It gets very confusing when you can use... But even the words that you can use both ways has different connotations. There are different connotations of what we're referring to. I saw many, there are many Jushim which focus on that difference. Sefer HaTorah Hazeh, Sefer HaTorah HaZos, why one place is Zed. Zos alludes to different aspects of the Torah. There are aspects that are masculine, there are aspects that are feminine, and the two of them go together. I once even heard a Jush, Ad Kedei Kach, a very interesting Jush, we have on the Sefer Torah, we have two Atzei Chayim. Okay, this is just, I'm calling from memory, I don't know the details. So why they on a Megillah, or on a Navi, well, Navi also we have two. Alright, so one Atzei Chaim represents Sefer HaTorah Hazeh, and the other Atzei Chaim is Sefer HaTorah HaZos. So we have two Atzei Chaim, because in the Aron, in the Sefer Torah, in the Shalunach Ba'aron, in the in the Mishkan, in the Mikdash, there was only one Atzei Chayim. The Sefer Torah was rolled onto one stick. So why then today do we put a Sefer Torah on two sticks? So you tell me we have to be practical. You can't go take out a Sefer Torah and start, you can't do that. It's just not practical. Okay, that's true. But maybe we can come up with another solution. But so the drush Sefer Torah hazeh, Sefer Torah hazeh. So what does each one represent? Put together, yeah. Bechoros, correct, right. So yeah, enachanan, right. So it all depends on the context, correct. Okay, but over here, Rashi, not often here do we have. We don't have too often in Nach, or at least not in Ksuvim, where we have diktuk Rashi's, and here he's telling us that the word Tavah goes on the Choshes. It's not going back on the word Mutzav. But it's interesting to take note that we do have this combination of Klei Nechoshes and Mutzav Tova. Let's go further. Tova, Losho Nikeva, Karel Nechoshes Shnayim, Shnei Kelim, two. They're going on the word, there are two Kelim. And that's also a bit difficult because there's no need to say this. A lot of the Mepharshim, I saw this in the art scroll, Ezra, he discusses this from various Mepharshim. The word Shnayim is really stuck in the middle. We don't need the word Shnayim altogether because Klei is plural. And the rule is, whenever you have plural word and you don't specify a number, it always means two. It always means a minimum of two. So why here do we have to have the word shnayim? Uchle nechoshes, it could just klei nechoshes, mutzav zav, period. Chamudos kazav. We don't need the word shnayim.
And this is where we learn it out from.
No. It's not really enough. All the sources. So someone has said the word Shnayim is not going on the beginning. It's going on a new statement. Klei Nechoshes Mutzav Zav. Period. Okay, that's one set. There was Klei Nechoshes. That was how many? We don't know how many. Two. It says two. Klei. Stam Klei is two. Or maybe there were more. We don't really know. And then it says, Shnayim. There were two more utensils, special utensils, which were Chamudos Kazav. So according to this other interpretation, the word Shnayim is not a conclusion of the sentence Mutzav Zohoft Shnayim, but rather it's a new expression in addition to the Klei Nechoshes Mutzav Tova. In addition, there were another Shnayim, another two beautiful utensils, which were Chamudos Kazav. Rashi is coming to reject that. Rashi says Shnayim Shnei Kelim, which seems to be going back. He's going back on the word clay. That's the simple understanding of Rashi. It's a conclusion of the previous expression, which then just means that this whole sentence is one description. We have clay nechoshes mutzav toiva shnayim. There are chamudos kazav. Rashi ka kelim kare chamudos b'loshen nekeva. The kelim are called chamudos b'loshen nekeva. Chamudos is nekeva. And it's referring back to the Kalim, which is a little bit difficult, even though Kli is Lashon Zohar. But yet we're referring to the word Chamudos goes back, and all the Kalim were precious. Okay, that's how Rashi learns Pshat the Pesach and the Tzuvos, and we'll stop because we're out of time. And we'll have to do the Medrash tomorrow. This is a very important Medrash on this possible. We'll do the Tzuvos, just finish up the Rashi, Pesach of Zayin, the random Tzuvos, Pesach of Zayin, La Darkonim, Elef, Kol Echon Choyim, Mishkoloi, Elef Darkonim. Each one was worth 1,000 Darkonim. Chamudos, so Rashi here learns, not like Rashi, that each one of the 20 bowls was equal to 1,000 Darkonim. Chamudos, Kazov, Chashuvos, Kazov. Okay, so we'll stop here, and tomorrow we'll pick up with the Medrash and Pesach of Zayin.